Ready?
Our evening began in Peter Seychelles' comfortable study in his New York townhouse.
No sleep till
Brooklyn! Yeah! Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, it's that end. From the Battery to the top of Manhattan.
Yo, rope!
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jim Shear, and welcome to another episode of the Brouhaha. And today, it's a very special episode because joining us is percussionist extraordinaire, Alfredo Ortiz. Fredo, welcome to the Brouhaha.
What the heck is going on, Brouhaha?
Now, you are the first guest on the Brouhaha to actually have a pregame meal.
Oh, yes, I did. Actually, the meal was for my wife. I just got the end of the meal, which was a nice vegan strawberry shortcake. And not that I'm vegan, but it tastes really good.
Now, did you get to eat prior to the brouhaha?
Yeah, I got to eat. I went to Tony's Italian Subs over in Toluca Lake. That's where I went to eat. And I have to say, it was pretty good.
So Fredo is being powered today by Tony's Italian Subs on the Brouhaha. And not to get too personal, but how's your wife doing?
My wife is doing great.
Because you had some minor hand surgery today.
Yeah, it was quick. It was a little snip and sewed her back up, and she's all good to go. She wasn't, she came out walking, so that was good.
You would hope, since they didn't do anything with her legs or feet. But you are a good husband, getting her dinner. And then
exactly.
I also slightly feel guilty for making you do the brouhaha while your wife, you know, she's nursing that hurt hand. So when we're done with this, please say thank you to your wife for me.
No, of course. She was using my throw as an armrest, you know, to keep the arm up.
All right, so, you know, we'll try to do this in a timely manner so you can get back to your wife. First, I want to talk about Bungloids, and then I would like to talk about Beasties with you. But congratulations, because you have met your goal.
I met my goal. That's
yes.
Amazing. But I mean, I don't know. Whoever's going to hear this, thank you so much. This is, you know, the overwhelming feeling of having that much love and support, you know, from the community and the world. You know, it's pretty amazing. So, you know, they wanted it, so I'm going to give it to them, you know, and they made it happen, so.
And here's the deal. Fredo launched a Kickstarter campaign to finish the Bongloids' first album. You needed to raise $15,000. I went on the site.
Correct.
I think there were, I forget how many days were left. You needed $1,000, and then a day or two later, you met it.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But we don't have to stop now, right? We can still contribute to the cause.
There's I think 9 days left, and every penny, every dollar helps. You know, going towards bettering the quality of everything that's going to come out, because there's still a lot of people selling vinyl and good little trinkets and that, you know. But I miss getting stuff like that. So definitely want to I told you before, I want to be able to own my own 7-inch and hold it up and see the clear vinyl and be, man, this is cool, you know, my songs are on here.
Because here's the deal with the Kickstarter campaign: there's various gifts you can get if you pledge money. Autographed 7-inches, you can get the autographed CD, there's t-shirts. I'm a man from the physical age. I like touching albums and CDs, and I like autographs, so I'm all for it. You putting out 7-inches and 12-inches and vinyls and CDs, because I like having that in my collection.
That's awesome. Did you catch the one about drum lessons?
Well, the thing is, Fredo, the drum lessons and the concert, it's all Southern California based. So I'm out in New York City. Yeah, I could just get t-shirts and autographs. So I told you that if I lived out in Cali, I would have definitely pledged for the Bongloids concert.
Oh, it would have been a party.
Now, has anyone pledged for that? I think one person has pledged for a Bongloids concert,
one
right?
One person has pledged for that, yeah. I think it might even be a family member.
Do you know when the concert will be yet?
Not sure. That'll have to be discussed with the person who pledged for it, and we'll have to set it up and get the lighting and sound, and it's going to be a big production. Roads just doesn't play a rock show. We put on a show, so we have to entertain.
Will Mario C be on the soundboard for that show?
I think he will. I think I'll have to buy him a couple of fish tacos, and we're all good.
Because you could hook it up with your connections. You go to Money Mark, and then Money Mark goes to Mario C, and then you have a great sound man for a Bongloids concert at someone's house. My next question, Fredo, is that with this Kickstarter campaign, do you sit in your living room and sign all these CDs and package the T-shirts? Will you have help? Do you need an intern for this?
I actually made pre-ordered some rubber stamps.
Okay, nice.
And I got my little godson to sit there and, stamp everything.
So you are you're sending everything out yourself, right?
Yeah, it's gonna be a pretty much a Bongloids, Fredo Ortiz, and wife production.
Because your wife, I believe, is the videographer for the Bongloids.
She is. She dragged me out of bed and said, "Come on, let's go get these clips. Clips of what? You running towards the camera, punching,
But I'm amazed by these clips, because the first time I saw Bongloids clip, I'm like, well, we all know that Fredo is great at drums. But in the one clip I saw, you're playing keyboards, you're playing bass. I think you might be singing at some point. Then you go to the guitar. Then you're back to the keyboards. So is there an instrument you can't play?
Let's see. I haven't been able to master the tablas.
Okay. All right. But everything else, you're good, right?
It's a trip. Ever since I was a kid, I've always been around instruments. And my dad, showed me a little bit of guitar. And I'd take the guitar on my own and strum it a little bit. And we had a piano in the house, and he actually taught me how to play Our Day Will Come. I forgot who the writer is, but I played it for a talent show probably in fourth grade. and that's pretty much the only song I know on piano, and then everything else is all improv.
Do you have any footage of that talent show?
No, I wish there was. That would be awesome.
So when you started the campaign, you had already been working on the album for a while, right?
I've been working on the album for about 3 years now. It's in the making. I've been working with co-producer and mixer, sound engineer, Rick Keeler. And we pretty much, we've done projects together before, nothing at this level, but, I was expressing that I wanted to, record a record, and he's like, "Hey, let's do it here." So what better to do it there? But, in these 3 years, I also needed to do what I did best, was play drums, and I would still get hired and go on tour, and so it kind of took me away from being able to focus on that. And but in between, if I would come home for 2 weeks, and I'd use those 2 weeks to keep going, and 3 years later, here we are.
Now, when did you hit a roadblock where you're like, "Oh crap! Ooh. Like I'm going to need some help with this."
That was when I actually had a connection. Because then I was like, "Oh, damn, what do I do?" Because I handed them a CD of stuff that I did on my own, which is without anybody helping me, record on my own in the studio. And I was like, "Okay, let's see if this is good enough," And I gave it to the sound placement guys, for TV shows. And they, you heard it? Like, "Oh, this is good, man." He's like, "Here, let me give you a CD. Take this home and listen to this, and maybe make some stuff like this." So that's kind of how it sparked it. I guess I wouldn't call it a big roadblock, but it was like, okay, I gotta stop and rethink this whole songwriting thing and take a different approach. And I needed a partner. I needed somebody. I needed to be able to do the art, and have somebody capture it.
But now you're taken care of. You've reached your goal. You're going to make the album, record the album, master the album, finish the album, and when will it be out?
I'm looking for a 2013 release.
Okay.
And, it's going to, now that I have the funding, and I can get the album get the mixes finished, get it mastered, send it for pressing, and then once I get it back, you know, I'll be ready to go and sit my little Godson down and okay, start stamping.
Poor God. Now, how old is the Godson?
Is he about 7 now?
Oh my gosh, you might get arrested.
Yeah, we start early in this family. We, you know, we put him to work.
Now, Fredo, I work in pop music, where we deal in 3 to 4 minute song structures. Some bungaloid songs you just jam out for a long time. So on this album, are you going to have singles, or are these extended jam outs, or a little bit of both?
Well, it's going to have a little bit of both and a little bit of everything. I did look at the clock as I was recording. What's your official pop song time limit?
I can go up to 3:30, but
okay,
I do like it around 3, and I can make an exception for 4 if it goes any longer than that. I'm like, okay, we can edit that for pop radio.
Right. So okay, good. Well, I'm in range.
Oh, okay, good. So we got some singles on the album.
We got some singles. We got some. You know, I was fulfilling the TV placement music and did some instrumentals, you know, so there's no singing, but you know, since I am a drummer, it kind of focuses around the drums and a lot of synths and cool guitar stuff and some dark stuff, some happy stuff. I even did a rap song on there called Sandburn, which is pretty much about me growing up in Southern California.
Awesome.
You know what? I'm gonna do some hip hop. I mean, I grew up, you know, around that and living in Gardena, which was also the home of Money Mark and Mario C and many other people. So the meeting of Money Mark, you know, and the coincidence of us growing up in Gardena was, you know, pretty cool. Obviously, we're generations apart, but it's like, you know, that influence of that area really rubbed off on me. And I don't know, the Rhodium swap meet in Torrance is where Dr. Dre used to sell mixtapes.
Oh, wow.
So the influence of hip hop, and you know, Gardena is, you know, right, is bordering Compton, so you know that whole influence definitely poured over. So you know, I had to do the hip hop. I had to represent, you know, how I grew up.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And, and I got the rock side, I got the instrumental side, and you know, kind of giving every kind of flavor.
And you have a lovely voice too. When you sing, you're a great singer, so you can go that route as well.
Exactly. You know, I was like, oh, I gotta, you know, I had to really sit down and think about all this because.
Now,
you know,
did you?
Like, oh, yeah, I'm writing songs in my house, but then I was like, oh, I gotta play them for people. Wait, I gotta learn the song first. Oh, wait. So you mean I gotta play the guitar and sing at the same time?
But Fredo, you know what they say? Every drummer's dream is to be a frontman in a band, and now the dream is yours.
The dream is mine, and I'm taking over.
Now, you were talking about Money Mark. Before we talk about Money Mark, there's a Beastie Boys lyric, "I'm the illest motherfucker from here to Gardena." Did you ever take exception to that lyric?
I did, and I was wondering who in the Beastie Boys was from. I'm like, how the heck do they know where Gardena is? Because nobody knows where Gardena is.
Yeah,
Garden Grove? Gardena? I was like, no, Gardena. But that was...
He claims illness of that territory. So I don't know how you or Money Mike or Money Mark feel about that.
I think we're happy that we were represented well.
Now, how did you meet Money Mark?
That was probably November of 1995.
Whoa, you got it pinned down.
At a coffee shop on Fairfax in Hollywood, West Hollywood.
Wow.
It's called the Nova Express Cafe, and I was playing with my punk band, The Villains. We were just, you know, we were playing coffee houses and doing punk shows and having fun and having a few drinks. And on my way out, as I was loading out my drums after my set, I bumped into this guy. And he's like, hey, what does your shirt say? And I was like, what? Well, excuse me, I'm trying to get out. I'm unloading my drums. But I think he already, you know, had a tip. on who I, what I did, you know,
okay,
as a percussionist. And he was just trying to, you know, trying to introduce himself to me. But I'm like, excuse me, sir, I'm trying to take my drums out here. You know, but that was our first encounter. And, you know, him asking about my T-shirt. And, you know, we looked at my T-shirt. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's like, cool T-shirt. And once I finished my drums, you know, I wanted to see the second band, which is a band called Monk. And they were kind of like a Fugazi-ish style band. And Mark came up to me and he kept talking. He's like, yeah, man, so you play drums. You play anything else? So I was like, well, yeah, actually I do. I play in another band called Yeska, which is kind of a Latin jazz ska band.
Mm-hmm.
And I play Latin percussion. I play timbales and congas and all the good stuff. He's like, oh, cool. Yeah. Hey, well, I got this gig in downtown L.A. I got my own project called My Mark. And the funny thing was is that before I met him, I saw Beastie Boys in 1986. My dad took me to the Raising Hell tour, and I bought two tour books. And I think the first one was the Run DMC tour book, and then the Beastie Boys tour. So I had already been, you know, a fan.
Wow.
Since then. But I did skip over Paul's Boutique, and I think that's when I decided to get into, you know, punk rock and I was, you know, and all that era. So I kind of skipped over that album. I don't know why.
Well, a lot of people did.
You know, and so by the time, you know, Check Your Head and No Communication came out, you know, all I still did was I was like, oh, they, you know, they do all those different styles of songs. It's awesome. I knew all the instrumentals. I knew the punk rock stuff. But I didn't pay attention to the members. I only paid attention to the three guys.
Mm-hmm.
So when I met Mark, you know, I had just seen him. So that was 95. There was a lot of Palooza tour that came through with, like, Smashing Pumpkins.
Right.
And Bad Brains. And so I went to go see them. So I had just seen him. So here we are in the coffee shop talking. And he hadn't told me that he played for the BCs yet. He was more explaining his band. And, you know, he had a gig and he was in downtown. And it wasn't until the end of the evening I finally asked him, as the, you know, 20-year-old drummer that I was, who was starting to network and, you know, ask people to jam, you know,
right,
quote unquote jam.
Right.
And he immediately said, yeah, I don't jam. And I was like, oh, wow, I was turned down. You don't want to jam. I was like, wow. All right. So then what? Like, what do we do next? He's like, give me a number. I got this gig, you know. And I was like, cool. You want me to bring my drums? He's like, no, I want you to bring your congas. I was like, oh. Okay. Yeah, I guess I could bring my congas. Even I wanted to be more of a, you know, I wanted to be Tommy Lee, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then the percussion thing came naturally, so I was able to play it, you know, and I was in a band that, you know, we were learning those styles. We were learning Afro-Cuban rhythms, Latin jazz, you know, and everything that involved that. And also, I grew up with that style of music, so I kind of had an ear for it. So when I played with them, you know, well, actually, you know, so the show comes up, and he finally lets me know, he's like, well, I play in this other band called the Beastie Boys, and my jaw dropped to the floor. I was like, what the hell? What did you just say? And literally, like the way I get approached now, it's the craziest thing. I approached Mark, and I dropped everything, and I stuck on my hand. I was like, can I shake your hand? and he laughed, and he's like, yeah, man, it's all good, man. He's like, listen, the guys are going to come down tonight. They're going to check out the show. I was like, oh, shit, cool. Well,
wow.
Hey, well, let me call all my friends.
Wow.
Let me page my friends and let them know that the pieces are going to be at this little underground club in downtown Los Angeles called 50 Bucks. And actually, this club, I played with my own bands, with Yeska and the punk bands, you know, and the guy who ran it was a guy named Rolo Castillo, who used to do the Taz posters back in the day. They did a lot of, like, punk rock posters in L.A.
Cool.
And they were, like, you know, they were, like cool, like, pop art, you know, for yep. Style posters. And so it was at his spot. So we go, we play the show. I bring my congas. His brother Mike's playing drums. I'm like, who's the drummer, man? Who's taking my place? Because I should be the drummer, you know. That's what was in my mind. But little did I know that ended up being my audition, because I met Yauk and I met Mike D that night.
Wow.
And they didn't say anything about tour. They didn't say anything, you know, about playing. They just said, hey, man, sounds good, man. Good to meet you. And I was just like, I'm looking at my friends in the corner of my eye going like, dude, they're right here. They're standing in front of me. What the heck? You know, and it was awesome. You know, we said, what's up? And that was it. And the next thing, you know, we're packing up, and I get a call the next day from Mark. He's like, hey, so, you know, the boys were there to check you out, and, you know, we got this tour coming up. You think you'd be available for it? He's like, it's not set in stone, so don't get too excited, but, you know, we need somebody, so if you're available, he's like, and I got to know. I got to know if you have a passport or not. And I'm like, a what?
Oh, no. Right, oh, no.
I'm like, what's a passport? You know, and he's like, you don't have a passport. Oh, shit. Okay, let me call you back. You know?
He's like, oh, well, you can't be in the Beastie Boys. Sorry.
This kid doesn't have a passport. What the hell?
Please tell me you got it expedited. Please, expedite that passport.
We went the same day. He drove me there. We went to the federal building, expedited it, and was ready to do this. And I went home, and I went home to find out that my mom was deciding not to let me go because, number one, she wanted me to finish school.
Oh,
I was
no.
in college. You know, I was in community college, ready, you know, getting my transfer credits to go to university.
It's like the lyrics to Fight for Your Right to Party. Your mom busted in and said, what's that noise? No. But continue, Fredo. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, no.
She's just jealous.
You know, so, and she didn't know. She didn't care. She didn't. It was just like, what do you mean you're going away, like traveling? You got to finish school. Like, wait, I know you want to be in a band, but, and then my dad's like, when's this kid going to get an opportunity like this? And I'm like sitting in the back home, like, mom, school's going to be there. Like, this is the Beastie Boys. You don't understand. And, so she ended up, she gave in and said, okay, all right, let's see where this goes. You know, let's see where this opportunity is going to go. And, they were still in Atwater. So we went to GSUN. We rehearsed for about a week.
Wow.
And, the coolest thing in my mind was that I already knew the songs. I already knew the instrumental stuff. Like, I knew the conga hits. I listened to it that much that, you know, I was like, oh, I know this shit. But at the same time, I was, you know, trying to be an aspiring musician, a professional, a session musician, somebody who's going to do this for a living. You know, my dad's like, you should go out and seek, you know, advice of your musician friends and see what you need to do to prepare for this. This is a big deal. So I went out and I'm like asking professionals, like, hey man, do you have any like advice or rhythms, you know, that you can teach me? And you're like, oh cool, what band are you playing for? I'm like, the Beastie Boys. He's like, oh man, Beastie, you don't need to learn anything. Because you probably can't hear the congas anyway, it's so loud, you know, they're playing hip hop, right? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You gotta show me something. I'm playing percussion, you know, you don't understand. And he's like, all right, I'm gonna play you one rhythm, but I guarantee you you're not gonna use it once. And he showed me a rhythm that I, you know, still know to this day, but he was right. I never used it once. The whole time I was in the band, because it was, you know, for a percussionist, it's, I mean, obviously you learn, you know, your theory and your rudiments and everything, but everything's pretty much feel and, you know, improvisation and kind of filling in the cracks. You know, you're making it exciting, you know, by adding these noises and other sounds. So it was never anything, you know, straight ahead. You know, it was always, you kind of have to be good at improvisation to, you know, kind of make percussion happen.
Now, Fredo, what year was it? Are we in 96 yet, or are we still 95?
So that was still 95, and come the new year, that's when we get together and rehearse. The decision was finally made, you know, that I was going to jump on board, and we were going to go rehearse. And the first gig was going to be in Melbourne, Australia.
Not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig. Somersault Festival in Australia. I think it was kind of an offshoot from the Big Day Out. And the craziest thing is when I saw the bill, it was pretty much all the bands I had been listening to currently at that time. So it was like Rancid, Bikini Kill, Jawbreaker, Foo Fighters, Beck, Pavement.
Wow.
are the amps.
Kim Deal, right?
Kim Deal and mm-hmm. the amp. And so I was like, you know, then I can say, like, well, what is, because I never really dreamed about, you know, doing this for a living. I did have dreams of being on a stage and lights, but, you know, I didn't say every day, like, man, one day I'm going to be up there. It was just like, you know, I was kind of just doing it already, you know. And so when I got into that next level, I was like, I knew what I had to do, but then it was just such a weird position to be in because I was 20. I'm used to, like, not being on that side of the curtain. Mm-hmm. And then here I am with an all-access pass. And, oh, did I forget? I happened to play for the headliner.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and here I am, you know, like, you know, Dave Grohl's walking by. And he's like, hey, what's up, Fredo? And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I had to really, like, adapt to my surroundings really quick and, you know, know how to deal with that. You know, I couldn't be a fan anymore.
No.
You could always be a fan.
Right.
But it's just like, you know, I was in a different position. You know, I couldn't be that excited. You know, I just had to do what I had to do and then just be around them. And, you know, eventually, you know, everybody became good fans. And that was like, what, 2 weeks of touring festival, you know, from Gold Coast to Melbourne to, you know, Perth. Sydney.
Wow.
And every night at that festival, we were at the hotels, we'd have a party, you know, and we'd take over, you know, some, you know, the bar band, you know, be playing, and we're like, hey, we have a bunch of rock stars here. Can we play guitar? Sure. Okay,
no.
Can we get off the drums? And then we just eventually just kick everybody off.
So the Beastie Boys were a lounge act at that point?
And it was kind of like an all-in round track. I think
wow.
we had like Pat Smear, Dave Grohl, Money Mark, Alison from.
If only YouTube existed back then, and cell phones
oh
with
God.
Cameras. Oh my gosh!
Right. It was just like, I took pictures. I took photos, but I ended up taking a lot of blurry photos.
Well, you couldn't check your photos back then.
You couldn't check your photos, and I probably thought I was being artistic or something with, you know, trying to get the, like, you know, the streams of light in the background. And
so there's
like,
somewhere in a small bar lounge overseas, you've got Dave Grohl jamming with the Beastie Boys?
Jamming with the Beastie Boys and in a small bar. And, like, everybody from the tour is in this bar, you know, just partying and drinking and just having a good time. And yeah, it was pretty amazing. And also there was after shows that DJ Shadow played. It was the first time I met DJ Shadow. And
this is like a dream.
Money Mark would do after shows, and I was always, when I was playing with Mark, so finally, you know, on this tour, it was decided that I was going to be Mark's drummer, and he would bring me up for the Insects Are All Around Us song. You know, oh, I got my friend, you know, but on this tour, he'd actually bring everybody else up that was at the bar at that night. You know, like, oh, here's Ad Rock, you know, you want to play drums? Oh, Dave, come play drums, you know. Oh, it's I'm from Foo Fighters. Come, you know, come play drums. So it's just like somebody different every night.
This is like Willy Wonka's magical world of chocolate, except with music and Beastie Boys. And
yeah,
I've probably said wow during this interview 20 times already. This is great.
And my friend Rolo, who used to do the posters, did the poster for that show, that concert, and I got a copy of those posters and has all those bands listed. I'm like, that was the first thing I ever did.
Wow. There's another wow from me. Another question for you. I'm going to have many. And like I said, Fredo, I think I promised, I said, we'll talk 20 minutes. We're over that now. So whenever you have to leave, you leave. But I got a zillion more questions. The fans, the hardcore Beastie fans, did they look at you at some point and be like, where's Eric Bobo at? You're not Eric Bobo. Because at this point in time, the internet's not that big. So maybe people thought that Eric Bobo was kicked out of the Beastie Boys. In reality, he was hanging out with Cypress Hill a lot, and he decided to play percussion for Cypress Hill.
Exactly. And pretty much said later and then left the Beasties to go, oh, shit, we need a percussionist.
Yeah, well, that opened the door for you.
Exactly.
But were any fans angry at you that you weren't Eric Bobo?
actually, they thought I still was a corporal and probably gained a few pounds. And, you know, and they would be like, hey, Bobo, turn around. Can we take a picture? And I'd be like, I'd just say, yeah. Like, I can't explain it to them. I'm like, no, you got to understand. I'm the new guy. No, it was pretty much like right off the bat, it was received, you know, pretty well. And I don't think I ever once got a question of like, why, where is Eric Bobo?
Okay.
Like, and then looking at, you know, the history and the records, you know, they've gone through a lot of percussionists, you know, there has been a line of amazing percussionists, you know, on the record and mm-hmm. live. And so many stories that I've heard, you know, awesome, like, stories from the road where, you know, you got your Cuban percussionist who's on tour in the bus, and, you know, he just changed into some dry clothes, but he's drying his sweaty clothes on, you know, the curtains of the bus, you know. So you walk in the back lounge, and you got, like, underwear and socks kind of hanging from, you know, the curtains. Like, what the heck? You know, cool stories like that. But aside from their underwear and socks, they were amazing percussionists. So you can imagine, you know, the shoes I had to fill. All these
yeah.
people, you know, I was learning from and listening to, and especially Bobo, because I knew his dad's music. You know, my dad was a big Willie Bobo fan. So, you know, I knew where Bobo was coming from, and I knew why he was there, you know. And when I think when I saw them at that Lollapalooza in 95, 94, 95.
94, yeah.
You know, there was a time where, Bobo put Money Mark on his shoulders, and they're running around the stage. I'm like, dude, that's awesome. Let's get to mess around and, like, just goof around on stage. That's rad, you know. But little did I know that I would meet them and end up working with, you
that's
know, all
crazy.
Of them.
That's crazy. So becoming, I want to fast forward a bit. At this point in time, 96, after that tour, you're an official member of the Beastie Boys. For years, I always just assumed that you were a percussionist extraordinaire, and then when AWOL left the band, I saw you do the punk songs with the Beastie Boys.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know Fredo could do that too. So when did AWOL step out of the Beastie Boys? And then can we talk about you assuming the punk duties as well?
I don't remember when he left, because I know that there have been points where, like, even, like, to the Five Boroughs, there was some touring that the boys did without the full band.
Yeah, because he was doing their technical stuff on the turntables for the early part of To the Five Boroughs. So he was still around in the camp, and then when they busted out the instruments for the full tour, then he was gone.
Yeah, I don't know where it went down or how it went down or what the reason was, but, you know, all of a sudden another, you know, a friend was gone, and you're like, oh, what happened to AWOL? But then, you know, you just accept it and you move on, you know. And when we were starting to do the mix-up and having to go on tour, and Yauch's like, man, I really want to do the punk stuff. And then, you know, Horowitz is like, well, Fredo plays punk. He's like, can you do the songs? Yauch asked me, he's like, can you do the songs? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Let's try them. Like, you know, it's kind of actually the first beats I ever learned as a drummer. You know, I started playing to Appetite for Destruction and GNR Lies.
Uh-huh.
I think I had the tapes, so I was playing the tapes and playing along to them. And then when I had a hip hop phase, and then when I went to high school, you know, one of my best friends, Louis Perez, he introduced me to, like, you know, some old Bad Religion and Black Flag and, like, Fugazi and Minor Threat and just all that stuff. And he was like, here, listen to these beats, you know, learn those. This is the kind of stuff that we're going to be playing. So I had to learn that style first, you know, from, like, you know, high school jazz band, marching band, to, like, learning Bad Religion beats. Like, that's pretty much where I went, you know. So by the time I got to the Beasties, I had already been playing Latin, funk, rock, whatever, jazz. You know, all my friends around me were taking jazz classes. So, I was absorbing all these styles. And then by the time, you know, it came down to needing that and the Beasties, and I raised my hand to do it, and they were like, yeah, let's try it out. And all of a sudden, boom.
It made sense. Like, yeah. And I was like, wow, they just streamlined the Beasties. They just eliminated a member, because Fredo can do both, because you don't need to do percussions on the punk songs.
Right, exactly. I would go, you know, go make a sandwich on those when they do the punk songs.
Now,
sandwich real quick.
Do you have a favorite Beastie Boys song to play?
To play. Wow, the Maestro was really awesome to play.
Wow. Yep.
And that was also a favorite song, so I was really stoked to do that.
Now, can we we have a trivia segment on the Brouhaha, and last episode we said that a lot of people didn't know this, that MCA actually plays guitar. He played that on the Maestro. So what's the instrumentation on the Maestro? You had Yauch on guitar. I think Mike and Adam were rhyming. Were you on percussions? Were you on the side percussion set?
So when I started doing the drums, I would do the drums. I think when AWOL was still there, he would be the drummer on the Maestro.
Gotcha. So when you behind the kit, did anyone do percussions on the Maestro?
I think Mixed Master finally gained the courage to go back there and to start banging on some bongos and some percussion. And I was like, dude, do it up, man, whatever. It's always nice when there's extra percussion. And when I first met Mixed Master, you know, and I think we were at, what, like complete rehearsals over in New York or something, and met him for the first time, and I saw him do his thing. I had totally skipped over the DJ world, and I was like, dude, you're like a drummer on turntables. Like, what's up? he's like, yeah, I'm just scratching. I'm like, that's amazing. Like, it just floored me, you know. So the dude has rhythm. So when he went back there in the percussion, I mean, he just fell right into place. I was like, that's awesome, dude. Bust it, you know.
Yeah, I love that song live. And there was no turntables on that song, right? It was all live instrumentation.
Except
maybe for the sample at the beginning of the song.
Right, yeah, exactly. And then I think he'd run over. I think we even set him up with some cowbells and shakers on his DJ turntables, you know, just so he can jam it on there.
Okay, so you enjoyed playing the Maestro live. How about your favorite punk song?
Because
I loved my favorites are A Greta Mojo, Tough Guy, and Heart Attack Man. Give me those three, and I'll be happy.
Right. I think I Want Some was a favorite of mine.
No, I Want Some. Yeah, it's a good one too.
And then what was the other one? BSTIE was a good one.
BSTIE. And I also like that the Beastie Boys changed Murder, Riot, Fight to I Want to Ride My Bike. I don't know if you... Did you ever get to do the I Want to Ride My Bike version of it?
I don't think so.
Oh, man.
That's so awesome.
So where did you guys rehearse when you were getting ready for a tour? Would you come to New York City?
Wait, I want to go back to the punk song.
Okay, let's go back.
Sober Violence would be my third.
Ooh, now how often did you play Sober Violence?
Not too often, but I saw it played more often with AWOL, and it was just like, I used to love watching AWOL playing the punk drums, and that dude is a master.
Yeah.
At that style, you know.
And the thing is, he came from the hardcore culture and community, so it was great having him up there, because I think AWOL played in Suicidal Tendencies for a bit. So yeah. Having him play the punk songs, I mean, gave them even more clout.
Exactly.
And I thought to myself, like, it's probably expensive to have AWOL just come out for four or five songs a night, but you got to have him because there's something magical when he's behind the kit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, and then, you know, he also, you know, he was also my tech at times, you know, where, you know, he'd set my stuff up. And when I first came in, he was actually my tech. And I think I came from, you know, playing in Hollywood where I'd have to tear down my own stuff. Playing with them, and I think I offered to help one time, and he's like, what are you doing here? Show's over. Get the hell out of here. Go party. I'm like, well, wait, I want to help you take down the drums. He's like, I got this. Leave me alone.
That's how he is. I mean, he's just a down-to-earth guy who understands everything, the on-stage stuff and the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Exactly. You know, man, we had some really good conversations on the road, man. That whole team was a family, man. It was, I couldn't, you know, I quickly got over, you know, being a fan to just becoming, you know, friends and, you know, just having people that will be there, you know, for any reason, you know.
Were you around during the Quasar tour?
I was not. I missed that. I also missed that.
Okay, because that was, I mean, very stripped down Beastie Boys.
And I've seen some YouTube videos of when they played on a boat, I think, and they were wearing
The wig,
like a captain's suit.
Yeah, I sadly did not get to see any Quasar shows. I think a lot of those were overseas.
Right.
But I think there was a couple in New York, but I wasn't living in New York at the time, sadly. So we fast forward. You're a full-fledged member of the Beastie Boys. Where do you guys rehearse? And how do you rehearse? And how seriously do you rehearse?
The rehearsals are really laid back. We probably spend about a week going over stuff, but a relaxed week. You know, we'd probably come in around noon, 1 o'clock, and leave by 5 or 6.
Wow.
And, you know, and studios were always set up to go. G-Sun was the first time I got to see the skate ramp and basketball court. And
did you take a shot? Did you take at least one shot? A free throw?
Oh,
a layup? Okay.
I actually played a game with them. So I was probably about 10 pounds heavier, and like, you know, I was like, oh, I don't really want to do sports. I just kind of want to hang out, you know, and you know, have a beer. And I'm like, come on, let's play. I'm like, all right, you know, and I was always the guy that, I'm not a sports guy, but I'll play the sport, you know, and I'll challenge myself to make the shot. And, you know, once I can kind of eyeball the shot and make it a couple times, and everybody get excited, but then there'll be the streak of like playing, you know, I wouldn't make anything. I'm like, see, I can't play this game. I'm out of here, you know.
But you would be a force in the post. You could just sit down in the low post, take that ball, and lay it up.
Right. And see, that was the thing. I didn't understand the game, so I would just kind of, like, run around crazy, like, come on, give me the ball. But like, what are you doing? Come on, help me out.
Fredo just needed to be coached. Now, who is the best athlete of the Beastie Boys?
Oh, they all got unique skills. They all got their, like, superpowers.
Because
awesome.
2 weeks ago, I played softball with Ad Rock.
Nice.
And he's
very
athletic.
He's a hell of a softball player.
Hell of a softball player. And he was playing catcher, and he was trash-talking the entire game.
Yeah, like Adam just not fucking around.
Yeah, like you're batting up. He's like, oh, come on, hey, man, what are you doing? You're like, shut up, I need to concentrate. So after G-Sun, sadly, it is no more. I wish that I could have gone to G-Sun. And
yeah, I forgot who's up there. There's a couple of artists up there.
Oh, it's still in operation?
I think it's out of operation. I mean, their offices, I don't know what they did to the main room. I haven't been up there, but I know it's still, I know the wall with the wizard, that's still there.
Yeah,
they haven't
from the Sure Shot video.
Yeah, they preserved all that. And I think the bottom, what used to be the drugstore downstairs is now an organic market. And actually the person who runs it, Piper, she was a cook on tour for Mike D.
Wow, yeah, Mike D's a very serious foodie.
Yeah. So and then we just learned, you know, that she owns a shop now right under G-Sun. We're like, that's awesome.
That's great.
How cool is that to have that tie, you know?
So if there's any hardcore fans out there, you can get a meal from a former Beastie cook, and then you can run up and down the steps like the Beastie Boys did in the Pass the Mic video.
Yeah, exactly.
And then maybe peek inside and see if you can see some of the artwork that was featured in Sure Shot. So you go G-Sun, and then I think the Beastie Boys migrate to the East Coast. They do the Dungeon. Did you ever get to jam out in the Dungeon?
I think I went to the Dungeon once.
Okay.
And then anything else, you know, for like any like world tours, I think we'd rent out a spot. You know, they didn't have their own spot anymore.
So did you, now was it New York City or out in L.A.?
By 98, it was all New York.
Okay. So there would just be random rehearsal spots in New York City where you would just jam out.
Your basic, you know, big studio tour pre-production type of rehearsal spot.
Now, did you have any say in the set list?
I would have some say on the set list. Yeah, I would kind of throw it out there and be like, what do you want to hear today? And I'd probably throw out about 3 or 4 songs, and he'd be like, nah. Like, don't ask me again, because I'm not really good at things like that, you know?
Now, what were your suggestions? Do you remember?
Oh, man. I mean, it was always what we were going to start with, you know, and we're like, do you want to do Super Disco Break-In first again, or should we do, you know?
That's awesome that you got to sit in on that.
Yeah, man. It was, you know, like as they've been saying for years, you know, it was a team, so it definitely, you know, nobody was excluded. You know, it was all for one for all. So, you know.
So when the Beastie Boys did their hip hop stuff, when they were rehearsing that, would they bounce around as ferociously as they did during their live shows?
No, it was pretty much, you know, Starbucks coffee and lounging and, you know, mic in hand.
And they would, you know, figure out who has what lyrics.
Yeah. What was that line? I don't remember. How does it go? Hey, Mixmaster, do you have that song? Can you play it real quick? Because I can't remember how the song goes.
And then when Mixmaster Mike would mix in the different instrumentals, did they know he was mixing in those instrumentals?
You know, yeah, I think he would, you know, suggest it, and then they'd be like, hell yeah, like, do whatever, you know, just go off, you know, make it interesting, you know.
Okay, so he had the freedom to call an audible during a live show.
Oh yeah,
nice.
And I mean, you'll, I don't know any specific YouTube videos, but there'll be some where they'll turn around and be like, oh shit, like, yeah, Mike. And I think that's when the whole Shammy thing came out, you know, like, come on, Mike, do the Shammy stretch. And then holding the finger, like,
yes,
you know, holding the whole thing, because Mixmaster Mike would be, you know, he'd be doing his thing and it'd be like, hold up, watch this, you know, and that just became a thing on tour. It'd be like, the finger, like, watch the finger.
Now, my claim, Fredo, my claim to Beastie Boys fame, besides being an obsessed fan and doing an unsanctioned Beastie Boys podcast, I believe I was the first fan to bring a cardboard finger to a Beastie Boys show.
Oh.
And I've saw you hold up that finger, too, at shows after that.
And did you make the even bigger finger after that?
I made the bigger finger the night after at McCarran Pool.
Yeah, that definitely.
And it brought great joy to see you hold the finger up, and then I think someone else had my other sign that said, watch the finger.
And there's a picture of my wife at Berkeley.
Like a boxing ring girl.
Yeah.
Oh, that's your wife.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
she was standing on the side of the stage, just kind of hanging out, and then there was these signs, and then, you know, all of a sudden, I'm like, here, babe, go outside, go out there and hold the sign. She's like, no, and then all of a sudden, Horowitz comes, it's like, you want to come out? Come on stage. She's like, okay. And she just worked it, man, and her dad is out in the audience, and he's like, wait a minute, is that my daughter? Like, it was pretty awesome.
Well, you know? It was neat because that show at Central Park.
Yours.
Yeah, those were mine. That show at Central Park, I just kind of like body surfed my signs up, and I'm like, oh, they're probably on the ground. And then I went to YouTube a couple days later, and I see this gorgeous lady walking across stage with the Watch the Finger sign. I was like, wow, my sign has made it to the West Coast.
Yep.
And it was held by your wife. Wow, we are connected now.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
We are definitely connected. Look at that.
And maybe it's because she was holding that sign that she injured her hand and she had to get surgery today.
Yeah, it's all your fault, damn it. I'll be sending you the bill.
So, one of my big questions of Beastie lore is what the heck happened during the hiatus between 1998 and 2004? For almost 6 years, it seems like the Beastie Boys just dropped off the map. So can you give us some insight as to what happened?
Yes, 2000 happened.
Okay.
Yes, 2000 happened. And I was lucky enough to be the drummer for that tour. Money Mark would always... So in between any Beastie stuff, I was always Mark's drummer, and we traveled a lot. As far as the boys, it was, you know, we kept in contact, but it was like after tour, you know, just like you kind of have to go back and, you know, do what it was back to... Not that that wasn't normal, but, you know, you just go back to what you had to do, you know, and you know, we'd call each other, we'd text you or send emails, you know, but we're not on the phone every day, be like, hey, what are you doing? You know, it's like, everybody's just kind of living their lives until it's time to get back to work, you know?
Now, would you ever get antsy? Because I know in the past, like, I know AWOL, hey, you got antsy, Hurricane got to the point, he's like, these guys don't tour enough, I need to make money, I need to feed my family.
You know, towards the end, probably, I was like, man, we got to go out, you know, it's like, you know, we got to be out there, but I was always wanting to go with the flow, so I And I always had something to do, and I was always playing with somebody, whether it be here in L.A. or abroad. And so, like, my time was always, you know, consumed with music. So, you know, I think...
But would you...
There was always a good buffer until that big phone call came and said, hey, we got another tour. Would you like to be a part of it? You know, that was the cool thing, is that they always called and asked first, you know, that...
Now, who gave you that phone call?
Who would call me? Shit. I mean, between all of them and management, you know, it was just like, what are you doing? You ready for another one? All right.
So would you drop everything to play with the Beastie Boys? So say if you had a tour with another band and the Beastie Boys called, you're like, ooh, guys, sorry, Beastie Boys just called.
I would. Exactly.
Sorry, guys.
Wow.
Now, was there ever a time where they needed you at moment's notice?
Yeah, there was one time. It was right after, towards the end of the five boroughs tour, where they're like, hey, we need the band back. And by the way, you need to buy a suit. And we're playing in Las Vegas in like 3 days. It's just like, oh, okay, sure. Suit. I don't own a suit. they're like, yeah, it has to be period, you know, mod style, short, small lapels, skinny tie. I'm like, huh? I don't own a suit. I guess I have to go to like the Goodwill and see what I can find. I really don't want to buy a new suit. So that was kind of like the last minute, like, all right, you know, back in the game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and that's, I think one of the videos, those instrumental videos, it's us going through the Hard Rock Hotel.
Oh, so that was for the black and white videos to promote the mix-up.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the first video.
We're almost done here, Fredo, because I feel bad that I've bogarted nearly an hour of your time. So just a couple more questions. Tend to your wife, apologize to your wife for me, and then thank her afterwards. Sorry, Fredo's wife. I apologize. You'll have your husband back in like 6 minutes. What were the Beastie Boys like on tour? Just take me backstage. Were they nervous before a show?
Never nervous. I mean, we'd all pump each other up. We'd have a little. Every tour had its little tradition of getting prepared, you know, and. And, you know, the whole team aspect of it, you know, it was definitely like, all right, let's get together. What are we going to do today? Everybody watch each other's backs, you know, and let's go. I think we were, I can't remember. We started doing like, you know, form of an eagle, you know, steel spiked balls, you know, or some shit like that, you know.
Well, in the awesome I shot that, it's what? Only good looks.
And then we fucked it up. We had to do it again.
I was backstage.
Take the open shot.
Yeah, take the open shot. I was backstage for your concert in New Orleans in 2004 for the Voodoo Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And it made me so happy that you guys kind of huddled up before the show. And it wasn't a nervousness, but it was almost these excited butterflies that were going on. I'm like, yes, like I love that they love it and that they're having fun.
Yeah. It wasn't something like, okay, got to do this again another night. You know, it was like, it was always, every show was special. And, you know, to have, you know, that many people who care about what we're doing, you know, just put their all into it, you know, and just do their best, and then, you know, the boys just had to do, all they had to do was walk on stage, you know, and it was done, you know, that's all they have to do.
And the people went nuts.
We're there to perform a show, and, you know, everybody would just give their all, and, you know, I think, you know, for me, being a part of that, you know, and having that same, you know, outlook on, you know, going on stage and going, all right, I'm here to bust, like, let's do this.
And you guys always did, too.
You know, I've always been a part of that, whether it be here in L.A., you know, I was always part of bands. So, you know, it was always, we were homies, we were family. We'd go eat, we'd go get drunk, we'd, you know, shoot the shit, you know. And, you know, when we were sad, we'd try to help each other out. It was just like, you know, I know there's stories out there. It's like a family, and, you know, sometimes you fight. It's like, we never fought. I mean, there's always going to be disagreements, and, you know, and if anything business-wise, it was just always their territory. It had nothing to do with us, you know, and that was cool that, you know, they kept us out of it, you know, because, yeah, we didn't need to do that. You know, we had to support them and, you know, be a part of that team, and it was, yeah.
And then
if we can just go through
the last year, how did you find out about the passing of Adam?
Because
I was reading the Rolling Stone magazine, and I was really surprised by Mike's quote. He said, "We were surprised all the way up until the end." So did you have any idea that he was doing poorly?
It came rather quickly, you know, his condition, even though, you know, we knew that our friend was sick, but it was like, I don't think he wanted to worry anybody, so none of us really knew, you know, and for them being so much closer, it seemed like they, you know, also didn't know, you know, and not that he was keeping it from anybody, it was just like, you know, that's just, you know, he wanted to have the peace around, you know, you know, when I found out, I think I got a phone call, I mean, it was a group text. So when I got that group text, it was, you know, I kind of had a feeling something was wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was total shock. And I still look at pictures and I still can't believe it. You know, I miss him a lot.
Do you know anything about the recording sessions that the Beasties did last year?
I mean, as far as the hip hop stuff and the instrumental stuff, I mean, there's a lot of stuff archived, you know, and who knows what's going to happen, you know. I'm not even asking, you know. It's just like, if it's going to happen, it'll happen. But definitely, I mean, when I looked at that board, you know, there was a lot of songs on their plate, you know, for the Hot Sauce Committee, and a lot of good stuff, you know, that still didn't get released. But, you know, I can't say that it will be or it won't be, you know. I don't even know that.
And then
my
last question for you is, there's been two fan days already in New York City. We're hoping to do one again next year. Would you ever be interested, if there was an all-star band that got together, would you ever be interested in playing some Beastie Boys songs?
Yeah, I would be interested, but how would we pull it off? All-star band, including who?
I don't know. But if we had you on drums, that would go a long way. But you'd be down for doing it.
I mean, I saw a lot of the stuff on, you know, through Facebook, and, you know, how Horvitz went out, you know, and so I talked to a lot of people, and, you know, it was a special moment, a special day, and it's pretty cool, man, that's been going on. And, you know, even on the West Coast, I mean, I think I haven't heard about any, like, thing to that level, but I was seeing, I think there was a couple of fans that were putting the money up to have these artists do billboards. I think they had Shepherd Fairey and Hayes do one, and some other artists. And so that was pretty awesome to be driving around and just like a billboard, you know, saying RIP, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as the show, I would love to. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
If we can make that happen, you know, I'll go and I'll bring my banjo, and we'll try to.
You know what? I'll get you a set. I'll even get you sticks. All you need to do is walk up on stage.
Oh yeah, man.
Okay. Beautiful. So we're going to try to make it happen, and we're going to try to do it every year to honor the late great Adam Yauch. And Fredo, I thank you a gazillion times for doing this.
No, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for, you know, for believing in me and helping out the project, because, you know, it's a new venture for me, but it definitely seems like, you know, it's going to happen and it's going to work, and, you know, people want to hear the music, and I can't wait to get it out there and just continue to do it. You know, I've been influenced by, you know, the boys for all my life, and Money Mark, and I owe a lot to them. You know, obviously I have my own way of expressing myself on the drums and music, but definitely have those influences firsthand. It's like, it's pretty amazing, you know. And all of that is, you know, pretty much seeping out of me, you know, everything that I've learned from them. I've learned so much, everything about the industry of the road and just being a person, you know.
Yeah.
And being in that position to be able to enjoy life, you know.
I can't wait to hear it. Quickly, do you have an album title?
No album title yet. So pretty much Bongaloids. Bongaloids is the main title for now, but I don't know. You know, I haven't thought it out yet. I'm still, you know, going to get some album artwork together, and I got to remember who played on the record.
but you have a Kick Butt logo, so at least you got that going for you, and I like the name too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's all my LA support. You know, my friend Chuvez, who, you know, he does a lot of dope graffiti art. You know, and I just, you know, I kind of hit him up, and you know, I was kind of just asking him for his advice, and he pretty much shot me back a logo. I was like, dude, this is it. This is the shit.
When you send me my Kickstarter thing, you don't need to send me anything except the T-shirt, because I do want the T-shirt, and I like the logo.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, Fredo, you're officially off the hook.
Right on.
Next, you just have to bring Money Mark to us, and then we'll have the trifecta. You, Mike, and Mark.
There you go.
So digest that cheesecake. Once again, apologies to your wife, and thank you to your wife. And for Fredo Ortiz, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yens later.
That's it. That's all there is. Come on.
Yo, we gonna end it on a 1, 2, 3 note. Are you ready? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Guarantee we bring the brouhaha.
It's a brouhaha.